All right. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another fun-packed episode of the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and we're here with a veritable power pack of intellect from the RPG superhero gaming community. Starting off with our first-time guest, Mr. Owen K. Stevens. How you doing, Owen?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you here. Owen, as you guys are well, Owen, actually, instead of me doing it, why don't you give everybody your quick rundown?
What I do in the industry?
Yeah.
So I am in the superhero industry. The main thing is that I run Rogue Genius Games. We've got two Mutant Masterminds lines currently. One is the Supercard Bestiary, which is a series of monsters already illustrated and written for M&M, written and illustrated by Jacob Blackman. And in fact, we're doing a Kickstarter for that right now. And then we also have Supercard Legends, which is a line of pastiche characters, also written and illustrated by Jacob Blackman. You may pick a theme, which are just individual or small group characters, all of which are interlinked, all of which are very, very familiar if you are a fan of superheroes. And one of our taglines for that is sometimes what you need is a character everyone recognizes, even if they're meeting them for the first time. Those are all quite popular.
If I'm not mistaken, that's being converted over to icons, isn't it?
Yeah, we are also converting those over to icons. Slowly, it takes time because we had a bit of a head start. But that same line, the Supercard Legends becomes Iconic Legends for icons, where we're working with Fainting Goat.
Okay.
I also happen to work for Green Ronin, and I'm an employee of Paizo, so I've got my fingers in many pies.
Cool. Pleasure to have you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
In addition to Owen, we've got Jacob Blackman, who's also in Rogue Genius Games, among various other companies he works for. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And I believe this is your second time on the podcast, right?
Actually, this is my first time on the podcast. I listen to you quite regularly. I believe I'm mentioned quite regularly, considering how much work I do for Fainting Goat Games, as well as a variety of other companies. But this is actually the first time I've been on the Banff.
I thought we had you on to talk about we did an artist specific podcast like 2 or 3 years ago, but that's been so long ago, and I drink kind of heavily, so
yeah, Mike, what you're probably thinking of is when we were doing the art for the Supervillain Handbook. Jacob and I and you met on Hangout to talk about all those pieces as we were coming up with them. It was a really great experience, and I learned a lot from doing it. But that might be.
Yeah, we did quite a bit of Hangouts online, but no, I've never actually been on the Banff.
You've talked to him in this format. You've just never recorded it before.
Okay, well, your complimentary martini shaker and T-shirt will be FedExed to you in a couple days. Then.
All right.
So. Thanks for joining. And not to give anyone a short shrift with the introductions, but the rest of our roundtable is Jason Chandro, who you heard a second ago, Dr. Comics, Mr. Aid Smith. How you doing, Aid?
Oh, I'm pretty good, thank you.
Walt Rebilliard, our frequent co-host.
And I am here.
The towering genius that is Christopher McLaughlin. How you doing, Chris?
I'm still quite high from the dentist, sir. Thank you.
You know, if we're the power pack, which is what you called us, then somebody has to be Franklin Richards and somebody else is that flying horse thing.
I'm going to be the horsey.
Okay.
Well, you're English, so that fits, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was a horrible anti-Anglo teeth joke. I feel bad for saying that. I mean, as a father of a 2-year-old, I am enmeshed, you know, swimming in British culture, mainly Thomas the Tank Engine, and I want to apologize for
taking
that away. All right, so hey, 2015 in review, in terms of comic books, movies, and pop culture. What do you guys think? Who's got opinions?
I think that the growing sense that geeks rule the world could not be disproven by looking at pop culture this year.
Oh, man. Just the Star Wars memorabilia alone that's going on right now. I can't even begin to talk.
Well, but also, I mean, look at television, right? We've got The Walking Dead, which is from a comic book. We've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, starting with the second season, got good. Yeah. We've got Supergirl, we've got Arrow, we've got Flash, who actually decided to give us a psychic talking gorilla twice.
And a really awesome shark.
Yeah, yeah. You've got iZombie, which is based on a comic. And Jessica Jones on Netflix, which is part of a whole Netflix combined experience. So there are multiple television continuities since Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow's coming up, they all share one, and Jessica Jones and Daredevil definitely share one. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. probably is in the same continuity, even though they may overlap, and that one actually ties to the movie continuity. We had Avengers and Ant-Man, and the hits just don't stop. The amount of superhero stuff that's in the mainstream now is kind of spectacular.
Yeah, this is definitely fair to say. I mean, it's kind of stunning when you think back to like 15, 20 years ago when all my friends would say, you have to go to any superhero movie no matter how much it sucks just so that there's a market for it.
Yeah.
Today we're kind of, you know, spoiled for choice.
That would explain the Spawn movie.
Yeah, that was when I sat out, but I had friends. Go ahead.
I was literally in that any superhero movie I must go see just so people will keep taking risks. I saw Shaq's Steel in the theater, which was an incredibly painful experience. But at the time, my feeling was that in order to convince people to take enough risks that eventually someone will discover that good superhero movies do better, we have to go support all the superhero movies.
Yeah.
And that's just not true anymore, right? There's a good chance there's a bunch of stuff coming up that I just won't see first run because it doesn't look like my cup of tea.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, there's I was really excited about just seeing Ant-Man. I think I'm going to be the only person in my circle of friends who gave a shit.
You know, I enjoyed Ant-Man.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was right up there with some of the other good Marvel movies. But
It had humor, but it was humor in a style that was different than Guardians of the Galaxy. So
yeah, absolutely.
I liked it a lot.
Well, and while it didn't make the kinds of money Age of Ultron did, it also didn't have the budget that Age of Ultron did. It didn't need to make that kind of money. One of the fascinating things about how Marvel is doing things is that not only are their movies thematically different, right? That's basically a heist film, but we've also had political thrillers in the second Captain America. Yeah. We've had straight-up action films. We've had a space opera. But on top of changing up what being a superhero movie means, they're also, in the same continuity, doing movies with different budgets that therefore have different levels of popularity necessary.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the ways they're trying to avoid getting fatigue, right? If every movie has to one-up something, then eventually you run out of options. But, spoilers, folks, the big final fight in Ant-Man happens in a little girl's bedroom. It is not a fight to save an entire planet. And that allows them, I think, to stretch out the number of stories they can tell quite smartly.
Yeah, I would agree.
I saw a recent note. They were talking about the sequel film, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I have to say that if we had to get Ant-Man just so I could get a Wasp movie, I'm all for that. I will totally vote for that. But they were coming that they had already chosen the genre template they were going to fit over it. In other words, it just like you were describing, you have the heist picture and you had the political thriller complete with Robert Redford when we watched the Captain America film. And then we had the first Captain America film, which was a straight-up sort of war movie. They've picked which film genre they're going to use as a template for the Wasp movie, but they're not revealing it yet. But this is sort of, appears to be Marvel's strategy, right? Let's make a superhero movie, but we're going to make it look like a superhero movie, but underneath the sheets, it's going to be something else.
Well, I guess that kind of works if you look at their TV offerings, too, because, I mean, Daredevil is a superhero TV show, ostensibly, but it sure feels like a crime procedural.
Yeah.
So...
as opposed to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a team-up film, right? It's the gadget team-up spy show.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And here I thought it was Joss Whedon's brother calling me up every weekend, please watch it.
You know, actually, I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has really, in the past couple seasons, found its own. Its ratings aren't terrible.
That's not what the actual numbers are saying. I mean, it keeps getting renewed, but I mean, if you factor in DVR, I mean, Flash, which isn't even on an actual network, is eating its lunch.
Yeah, is doing much, much better, but there's a difference between not being the best and being terrible.
It's a great show.
There are tons of shows with worse ratings than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, of course, Disney has to sit around and say, how much money do we feel we have to make to have 20 hour-long advertisements for our biggest movie every year.
Yeah. Well, here's something to consider.
Well, that's assuming that somebody at Disney is actually claiming that more people are going to see their movies because of this TV show that very few people watch.
I guarantee someone's claiming that. After all, it keeps getting renewed.
Well,
considered a failure because it only made $2 billion. Because they were really hoping it was going to break through to the next level and be like a $3 or $4 billion level movie. And apparently people lost their jobs when they restructured the way they do things creatively at Marvel/Disney because it wasn't as big as they were hoping.
For which movie?
Age of Ultron.
I think that one of the reasons Age of Ultron did so poorly, to be honest, is because of the different way they approached it as opposed to the first Avengers movie. If you look at the how it was in when they did that first series of movies, it was all leading up to the Avengers. Just a huge, giant blowout where finally have this massive universe. And ever since the first Avengers movie, it's been about, okay, let's get to the next movie. And okay, let's show them what's going to happen in the next movie. Let's show them what's going to happen in the next movie. Instead of just making a good movie, they're trying to show you what we're going to do next, what we're going to do next. That is where I think they failed in Age of Ultron. They should have just made it the heroes smashing robots instead of let's get set up for this big thing with this mysterious big bad guy.
Yeah. Apparently Joss Whedon had a lot of interference from the studio on that one, and he found it so stressful he's not going to make the next Avengers movie. So...
And my understanding was that he always thought that was going to be his out from being in charge of everything, right? You can only do so many giant blockbusters in a row.
Okay. Someone should have told Michael Bay that.
As we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 that just hit the trailers.
Oh. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made a lot of money, right? Yeah. All of the Transformers movies made a lot of money.
You can criticize them all you want, but yeah, they made bank. So,
but it's very clear that the way that Michael Bay is handling the stress of having to constantly make giant blockbuster films is by not giving a shit.
Well, yeah. Although I gotta say, I didn't see the first Turtles movie just because I didn't want to, and the trailer for the second one actually didn't look bad. I saw it earlier today. And
bless my soul, it actually looks like something I might go see.
Yeah, or at the very least, you know, next time I have the flu and it's on Netflix, I might check it out. I don't know, but
adding Casey Jones is a sure way to get me to reconsider whether or not I'm going to see your movie.
I think Casey Jones makes every movie better. If he'd been in Tomorrowland, I might have gone and seen that.
You know, I saw Tomorrowland, and the main problem about Tomorrowland, I feel, was kind of the same problem with, like, Last Action Hero, in that it could have given you the movie that you wanted to see, but consciously chose not to, and then told you felt bad for wanting to see that movie.
Yeah, I saw Tomorrowland and Jurassic World in subsequent weeks, and they were both movies about theme parks, and I found them very interesting to compare. And in particular, in Jurassic World, the reason why I felt that movie worked emotionally is because you have a reluctant kid in like attending it. You have the older brother who's like bored and wants to just flirt with girls and be on his phone all day. But by the end of the movie, he's into it. But you didn't have anybody like that in the first movie. Everybody was already into it except for like the girl who's like the protagonist. She was the one that there was nothing to convert. She was already there. And Clooney, the older guy, he just hated it and wanted to leave. So you didn't have anybody there to be a viewer identification character who could come to love the park.
To me, the biggest problem was that the park itself did not, in any useful function, actually exist.
Yeah. Right.
The most interesting part of that movie is the ad, which is what they put in all the trailers. It got us all excited for this exciting place called Tomorrowland, which is actually a nihilistic, abandoned ruin.
Yeah.
Yep. It's like having done Jurassic World and you showed up and it turns out all the dinosaurs were killed off by a dinosaur flu before the movie started. Well, then what did I come here to watch? Good grief.
All right, well, I'm going to switch over to comic books, and I'll say that my best superhero comic of this year has been Squirrel Girl because it's funny and it's smart, and I don't get that often enough in monthly comics. And my best non-superhero comic this year is going to be The Fade Out from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, which has been just wonderful and pulpy. And if you like, you know, that whole kind of crime noir thing set in the post-World War II Hollywood kind of time frame, you really should pick it up. Hey, you've been kind of quiet so far. What are your best comic books this year?
Oh, dear. That is a tough one. I was thinking about this, and there's potential for so much stuff out there. I say it every time, Sequels is still pretty cool. I'm really enjoying the core books.
I knew you would say that, Abe.
Yep. The other books, the core book though, very interesting. But for non-superhero comic books, easily, Providence, Alan Moore. Absolutely brilliant.
What is this?
Providence. It's a Cthulhu mythos book. And it is like it's the most slow burn story ever. We're 6 issues into it and virtually not a lot has happened apart from the main kind of character walking around places trying to investigate the Necronomicon and or some other book of darkness. But it's kind of slowly gets more sinister and stuff happens every issue and you go, okay, did something happen then? And yes, it did. It is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
It's named after Providence, Rhode Island, I presume?
I believe so, yes. Okay. Yes. So there's kind of like, there's parallels to existing Lovecraftian characters, but there's also, unless I'm mistaken, kind of the main character kind of interacts with the Deep One born families from Innsmouth and the Whatley family from the colour the Cthulhu story with the big monster that bursts out of the house, it's invisible, and the colour out of space is in there and it's just absolutely fantastic. Really, really good. If you know your mythos, it's really cool.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. I didn't know about that before hearing you talk about it. I'll have to check that out then.
Yeah, definitely worth it. It's Avatar Publishing, so it's kind of a slightly smaller company, but I had to ask for it specifically at my comic book store to actually order it in, and I think I'm probably about one of a handful of people that actually gets it. So it's something you might have to track down, but well worth it. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've been reading Uber from Avatar and Warren Ellis Avatar book. So does it seem like they do a lot more gore in Avatar than you would think in other titles?
Yeah, they're not a lot of gore in this. It's pretty. Okay. It's pretty. It's what you expect for Alan Moore. Lots of talking, lots of kind of thinkiness, but not enough. Not a lot of splatfest stuff. I mean, not to the invincible levels of splatiness anyway. So.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, hey, Chris, you've been quiet for a little bit, and I understand you're still reeling from various dental hallucinogens and psychotropics. But
it's all these goddamn bats in here.
We can't stop the car. It's bat country. favorite and least favorite, or at least favorite books of 2015. If you have any favorites, if not, just criticize some stuff.
You know the only books that I read this year that didn't make me want to go for a bottle of gin and a revolver were Batman 66, which has, of course, been canceled because DC hates joy.
Did you know they're doing a Batman 66 Man from U.N.C.L.E. crossover right now?
Yes. And apparently that's its future. And I don't know if I made a friend when I did this, but I actually got to talk to the writer Jeff Parker at Baltimore Comic Con. And I complimented him endlessly for the book, and then he started talking about all these crossovers, all these 60s TV shows, and I let slip that, Batman Green Acres.
I would read that.
Seeing Bruce Wayne falling for one of Mr. Haney's hilarious flimflams? Okay. And who doesn't want to see Burt Ward work with Arnold the Pig?
That'd be like a dream come true.
Absolutely. For me, TV was my real dad, so yes. I mean, to me, that's something I want to see. There were times that Astro City didn't make me weep. So, it has its good months.
Yeah.
But everything Marvel, it's just, Marvel is starting to remind me of one of these 60s bands that they're down to, like, the drummer and, like, four replacement guys, and they're just still playing their two hits over and over and over and over again. And then DC just personally hates me. It's like, what is he looking for in comics? Let's do the opposite. And I just, I mean...
I've seen that memo.
Yeah. Apparently, I must have stole Dan Didio's parking space at Baltimore Comic Con one year or something. I mean, even the books of theirs I was really enjoying, like Green Lantern and The Flash, have just gotten... Green Lantern, I'm sticking with it because it's actually drifted over into hilariously terrible. All I need is a robot on each side of me, and we could mock every issue. I mean, it's just... when I saw the preview art of Hal Mangold, the whitest white man that ever whited, he's going to be an outlaw because he's wearing a hoodie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what a frightened middle-aged man thinks is an outlaw. I mean, this. I'm sorry. I should go have a good lie down. I'm sorry.
Okay. The DC books. I recommend looking at Prez. I really did enjoy Prez. The first six issues have been really cool.
It just looked to be tailor-made to not be for me. I may check it out later, but it's like teenage girl. Okay, right away, something I completely don't understand and have no interest in.
No, I thought that exactly. I really did. It's nothing like that at all. I think it's really, really clever, and it should have been a Vertigo title. It should not have been a DC title. I think it's excellent. Some guy wrote a review on Bleeding Cool about two or three issues into it. And said, "Oh, you should be reading this book." I thought, "Oh, what the hell? I like look at the artwork." I ordered from eBay, and I've been buying them from eBay every time. And
let me ask you about the second thing where they lost me. They lost me at political satire.
Yeah.
Because to me, political satire is code for, "Hey, Republicans are evil," and I'm like, "Oh my God! Well, I've never heard this before."
No, it's not really like that either. I don't think. I mean, so my obviously slightly stand backness from the U.S. political,
which is absolutely the best way to treat U.S. politics.
Exactly,
Seriously, yeah. you can't get far enough away from it.
But Chris, have you been watching the news this last week in terms of GOP frontrunners in the presidential primary?
I've been following elections since '76, and I still live by the motto that nobody starts paying attention until the summer of 2016. So you're just left with people that are running off of name recognition. And so, if it's anybody other than Hillary Clinton and the guy from the reality show at this point, I'd be very surprised.
You know, I will be stunned if Trump actually gets the nomination.
Yes.
I think we can all agree on that. All right. Well, hey, Chris, movies. What's your favorite movie? Because I know you watch a lot of movies.
Oh, God, do I have to talk about modern films?
No.
No, because I got to see the first two Godfather films on the big screen for the very first time, and I saw a great film get greater to me, and it made me so happy and so wonderful that the medium is still capable of having that kind of effect on us as poor miserable mortal beings.
Did you leave the cannoli?
I was at an Alamo Draft House. I left nothing but an empty plate, especially when I finally noticed they had a dessert menu, and I saw salted caramel milkshake.
Oh wow! Yeah.
So I saw Ant-Man, and I just had to sit. It took me like an hour to stop thinking about how I'm in an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm having a pretty good time. So I don't think I quite got over that still. And I saw Avengers, and that was this year, right?
Good.
And that was way better than it had any right to be. I knew that there were people that were gonna hate it because, you know, that's a living now. You can make a living hating things that you're supposed to hate. But I thought other than the lack of a pizza dog cameo, that was a darn near perfect movie. I mean, way better than it had any right to be. So I enjoy, neither one of them is the Godfather, but you know, I mean, it's okay to put on the 3D glasses and have a good time at the movies. I just really wish that wasn't 98% of the films being made. Or at least I wish a higher chunk of that 98% was as good as Avengers and Ant-Man were.
Fair enough. Hey, now you mentioned the MSTK3 thing. Walt and I were talking about if we could do that, you know, on the podcast, just have us all reading a comic book and mocking it at the same time. Real time. What do you think?
Well, I think people have different reading speeds, so I'm not sure how well that would work out.
Yeah. Might work better with the TV episode, but I don't know.
You'd have to actually have like a page, the pages on the video, so that the people could watch it and see the pages we're talking about it, right?
Yeah, that can be done.
Someone took some Civil War comics and rewrote all of the dialogue and text, and that was the way of watching that comic.
I loved when they did that.
And that means if you do that, right, you could throw in editorial comments along with all the rewrites and make that the form of mockery so that people don't have to worry about read speed or how they do comics or any of that.
And I'm reminded of RPGNet's one shining moment when somebody posted a mistying or riffing, however you want to call it, of Jack Chick's legendary anti-AD&D tract. Which was brilliant.
Dark Dungeons,
yes.
Have you guys seen the movie to that done by that gentleman?
Did that come out? Did the movie come out?
Yeah, it's already out. It's available for free on YouTube and on the Dead Gentleman website.
Yeah.
And you can also get the DVD. I fully support Zombie Orpheus Entertainment and Dead Gentleman. They make wonderful films, and Dark Dungeons is a faithful recreation of the Chick track.
Nice.
All right. Hey, Walt, favorite and least favorite, 2015. Go.
Oh, so many, so little time. I'm going to go with Chris. I'm going to echo what he said, that Marvel is boring the shit out of me, and I'm a Marvel guy, and to say that really hurts me in my happy place. So, you know, the fact that they constantly recycle everything, and now we're getting a Civil War 2. Like, why do we need a Civil War 2? I don't know. But that allows me to look for other stuff and really geek out on other stuff. I am loving Valiant Comics right now. I mean, there's so much good stuff going on there. And even when they go to a crossover, you don't feel cheated. Like, oh, if you don't get every part of the story, you're blah, 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 blah. You know, it just feels like good comic book storytelling. And even their individual titles, Exo Manowar, Ninjak is doing amazing stuff. I mean, just their storytelling in general, the artwork is really good. They just finishing up their Book of Death storyline crossover. It's really great storytelling. I'm enjoying it. And then to go with something that also Chris had talked about before, Power is on PlayStation. Holy crap. You know, talk about doing a series right. I mean, that was just very, very nicely done. But I'm always the indie guy. I love indie comics. And, you know, in 2015, we had, of course, Zenith Comics Presents Heroic Number 2 from my longtime collaborator, Andrew Colas, continuing that story. But we have Andrew Lorenz that we've interviewed on the show a couple times. He's continuing to put out his legacy titles, which are really, really good. The character of Paragon is funny, and he even has a Mr. Potato Head version, which is awesome. But he just released the second issue of New Guard, which was a longtime favorite. We had space sci-fi epic Salvagers, about a bunch of junk pickers that rescue salvaged ships in a sci-fi setting. And we just got Interceptor number 2 from Unstoppable Comics. I mean, there's so much good stuff going on right now, so that when guys like Marvel and DC just all they are is pouring a brand so you'll go see a movie. I mean, there's all these creators in the trenches that are not part of this big media machine that are crafting incredible stories, and people should definitely go check them out.
Okay, a couple of questions for you.
Sure, hit me.
Okay. Right, so these books you've mentioned, these independents, are you buying them digitally or are you buying physical copies?
Both. Unstoppable Comics has a huge catalog that they you can get both digital through like Drive-Thru Comics, and you can get physical. Andrew Lorenz, you know, friend him on Twitter. He's very active on there. Always answers his fans. I've never seen him not answer something sent toward him. He has both print and digital. Salvagers. Bob Sally actually is going to be, we're going to be interviewing him next week for the Creator Spotlight. He does Salvagers, and you can get his stuff in both print and digital. So, I mean, all this stuff, just pick it up if you can. Support these indie creators, because I really believe this is going to be the next wave of greats coming up.
So I think the comic store I use to get my stuff from is a small place, so they need like almost like a 3 or 4 month commitment in it. So this is why a lot of that independent stuff does not get through my door, because it's like, okay, do I really want to read it or not? And it's like, you have to order it in advance just in case it's good. So yeah. That's the first question. Second question. Marvel titles, you say. Have you picked up any of the Marvel relaunch titles?
I have, and while they parts of them were interesting, there weren't parts that like right now. I'm currently reading the new Captain America series, which it's okay. I mean, I thought in the first issue, the incident on the plane when the kids recognize Sam Wilson, and they're tweeting about it and stuff like that. That was funny, you know, but like. He starts taking on Border Patrol agents and the Serpent Society, about illegal border crossing and stuff like that. And it wasn't the story itself that bothered me, because I would like to see more mainstream events get into comics. It was just, I don't know, the way it just seemed very cheesy, like, ha-ha, we're the Sons of the Serpent, and we're going to stop these illegals from coming in. Dude, really? Posing, flashing megalomaniacal taglines? I mean, give me something smarter in my comics. You know, but like, one thing I am enjoying from Marvel that I am picking up, Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. Holy crap, how geeky and stupid that is. I love it. I love every issue so far. It's just, have you seen this?
No, I just love the title. I'm aware of it, yeah.
Yeah, the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. are Dum Dum Dugan finds out he's actually a downloaded consciousness in an LMD body, and they just keep recycling him. That's why he never ages. And they put him in charge of actual monsters to fight supernatural threats for S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, you got the greatest reveal ever was a character you never think to see show up in a superhero comic. And they show up in the comic, and you're just like, holy crap, that's cool. You know, and you have to research, you know, a little bit of, have I seen this guy in a comic after 1972? You know, it's really good. That's the one I am enjoying. I am reading Secret Wars, and I just feel like I'm slogging through it. I don't know. I don't like it.
You don't like it? Okay.
No. Okay. I just
All New Avengers. Mark Waid's writing it.
Really?
It's only two issues in, but it's Mark Waid writing a team book, so it's It's only two issues in, and it's all the introductory stuff, like, oh, hey, Nova, you're here. Oh, hey, Miss Marvel, you're here. So I don't really know if it's good yet or not, but it doesn't suck. And for a newly launched team book from the Big Two, yeah, that's something.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ed.
I'm enjoying Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is pretty cool. Doctor Strange at the moment reads like a Doctor Strange book should, rather than, oh, we have a movie upcoming. Whether or not that will change... when they go, oh, look, Dumanu's the bad guy in the Doctor Strange movie, therefore Dumanu's in everything. We'll see if that happens or not. But at the moment, it actually reads like something quite clever. It's quite cool.
Now, Aid, have you checked out...
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, who's playing Doctor Strange? Was it Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yep. It is Cumberbatch. Sherlock himself, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Aid, have you read The Incredible Lives of Dr. Mirage yet from Image? I mean, from
Valiant? No, I haven't. I used to get the old series, and I really did enjoy the late series. It's just, again, it's Valiant stuff. It was when they did the relaunch, it was like, do I go buy it again, do I not? And I kind of left it because I knew it was going to be this thing, like you buy one title, and all of a sudden there's 30 titles. and I kind of just left it as it was and just kind of stepped away. At that time, I was buying a lot more DC and Marvel books anyway. So, but funnily enough, the last question is Valiant related.
Absolutely, hit me.
The next crossover they're doing, I believe, is 4001.
Yes, yeah, they just announced that with Rise.
Surely that is Magnus Robot Fighter era, and Magnus Robot Fighter is not around. So what are they going to do?
Well, I know Rye is going to be featured heavily, and if you've picked up the Rye books, all I can say is, oh my God, that art!
You know, it's gorgeous, isn't it? Absolutely fantastic.
It's breathtaking. And then when they start, because this takes place, 2,000 plus years in the future, in a city that every year the city grows, so that every level of this city represents a year since they founded it. And just when they start going to different levels, I mean, it's just, oh my God, it's mind-numbing.
Cool.
All right, cool. Hey, Owen, you haven't talked in a while. Best and worst of 2015 comic books. Go.
I'm actually just going to stick with best, because if I took worst, this would be the entire freaking show. There's a lot of stuff I didn't enjoy. There's a lot of mainstream that I just couldn't get into, and I picked up one or two copies of a lot of stuff. I'll start with some independent stuff. I'm a big fan of Lumberjanes.
That's a good one, yeah.
Which is done by Boom Studios, and it's Shannon Waters and Noel Stevenson and some other people whose names I can't come up with. And I sort of desperately hope that someday someone makes it a television show. But it's sort of a brilliant Girl Scout dangerous magic world comic, and it is interesting, and it, despite having obvious fantastic elements in it, the way everyone actually acts feels really real, which, he was just talking about, give me something smarter than archetypical villain yelling catchphrases that we started hearing in 1920, right? Lumberjanes has something smarter, and I really appreciate it, and I like that it's a very creator-driven comic, so I'm a big fan of it. For mainstream stuff, my mainstream stuff isn't as mainstream as some other people's. For DC, I really like Multiversity, which ended this year.
That was very cool.
And that may have been a pure, I like the weird stuff, hey, I remember some of these things, oh my God, someone did a picture of Captain Carrick looking all serious. Right? That's enough to get me to buy a comic. That'll get me to buy a bunch of comics. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it connected to a bunch of the kind of stuff I want. And I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff they did with that. It was sort of like the Spider Crisis comics that they were doing, right? When you're reading Spider-Man on Infinite Earths,
Spider-Verse, yeah,
yes, they were, Spider-Verse, and they're bringing in the mecha from the Japanese Spider-Man television show.
I think Jason Tundra mentioned a few months back on this podcast that they were basically doing the same. I mean, very similar things when those two.
Yeah, titles. And I enjoyed both of them. For current ongoing sort of mainstream, I really like Kamala Khan's Ms. Marvel. I think it is smartly written. I think it is interesting. I like that they have created a new character that they are taking seriously and giving support to. And I actually find her the best argument for Inhumans being interesting rather than just replacement mutants.
All right. Yeah, I've been picking that up periodically, and I've been enjoying it, but I kind of dropped it during the Secret Wars because I didn't know what the hell was happening.
Yeah, that's sort of a problem with a lot of... There's a significant marketing effort, I think, by a lot of the comic book companies to boost readership by having things be so that you can only really know what's going on if you're buying 20 of their comics a month. And at, as a random number, $5 a comic, that's a $100 a month investment, and I'm just not doing that. I just... Especially for the quality I'm getting, I'm just not doing that. And I'm definitely not doing that all for one company.
Yeah, they'd be in real trouble if there were some way to illegally get copies of their comics somewhere. I mean, if somebody ever figures out how to do that, they're screwed.
You mean if you could, download them using a comic book reader?
Yeah, we're just spitballing here, but,
And honest to God, I don't, and one of the reasons I don't is that I hate reading comics on screen. Another reason is I sell a lot of game PDFs, and the very idea makes me a little queasy in the pit of my stomach. because if there was a way to get all of the stuff that Rogue Genius produces without paying me for it, it's bad enough that a lot of our stuff is OGL and you can do that legally. I don't need to add people doing it illegally.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I had the first time one of my books turned up on Scrib at the this week.
Nice.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Extreme Earth, one of our big...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, one of our big Kickstarters from this last year, 2014. We finally got everything delivered this year, and a few weeks after the Kickstarter went live, the books turned up on Scrib-D, so...
Yep.
I'm having to sign up and try to get a, you know, however you protest those things. But, yeah, I can definitely feel what you're saying there.
You know you've made it when people start pirating your stuff.
Exactly what I was going to say, yeah. That's right.
And not even so much pissed, it's just kind of, I feel like I should protest it, so I got to, you know, sign up for Scrib-D and then yell at the right people and, you know, all that malarkey, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I feel like that's necessarily helping, but it does feel like it's probably a good idea.
Yeah, well, if you're a publisher, you feel like you should do it, you know? It's like you're being negligent if you don't, so. So, anyway, that's something I'll be doing later on tonight. Hey, Jacob, what are your favorites and or least favorites comic books 2015?
Well, I don't actually read a lot of mainstream stuff. Marvel and DC lost me several years ago because
That's fine.
It seemed like a lot of their stories were just, who can we kill or what heroes can we make fight in this issue? And I don't like reading stories where heroes are fighting heroes. I like stories where heroes are being heroes. So Marvel and DC pretty much lost me. As terms of ongoing series, I read a lot of various different stuff. My favorite series is Gold Digger by Fred Perry, that's published by Antarctic Press, and it's a manga series about basically they are superheroic ruin explorers and archaeologists, and they use their abilities to hunt down these strange and mysterious ancient civilizations of bygone eras, and they usually end up, you know, having to face a lot of strange monsters and creatures of these ancient eras, and the left on technologies that are trying to slay them and that sort of thing. It's a really fun series. A lot of comedy, a lot of serious events. So a massive cast of characters. It's just fun.
Oh, cool.
As for smaller series, I like Death Vigil by Stefan Sejic that just came out. It's about the incarnation of death recruiting people who have just recently died, who have noble hearts, and empowering them with magical items that help her fight against the forces of evil, who in this case are necromancers trying to bring forth strange tentacled Cthulhu things from beyond the veil.
Are there any other kind?
They don't all have tentacles.
No.
some of them are just wreathed in fire.
And actually, just yesterday, I got a copy of Rat Queens Volume 2, which is a comic that takes place in a fantasy world about a group of women adventurers who, while they're not heroes, they're very much mercenaries, they always end up seeming to get into situations that makes them have to save the day.
Rat Queens is like my crack. Oh my god, that series is so good.
Rat Queens is awesome.
I just got it yesterday, just finished it earlier today, and for volume 2, and I was chuckling. I love it. It's a good series.
All right, cool. Hey, Jason, you're the only one who hasn't weighed in.
A couple of comics, and then another thing that I want to mention. The Star Wars comics are really great. If anybody has not read them or hasn't been looking at them, they're funny and unexpected and well, beautifully illustrated, and I have a hell of a time. I love reading them. And also, Busek's Tooth and Claw, don't know if anyone knows this book or has been.
That book is strange.
Yeah, it is. It's a sort of Conan Barsoomian fantasy world, except that everyone is animals, and one human being kind of arrives. But I love the prose sections for it. He's got pages put into it as if you were excerpts from a pulp era novel. I love the characterization, and the anthropomorphic animalness of it is done in a really smart and clever way, I think. So I like that book a lot. And on a non-comics related note, I've really been struck lately, as I've been thinking about it this year, I think we finally got kind of some female superhero breakout roles. We have both Jessica Jones on Netflix and we have Supergirl on television, which is a huge step forward. I know that not those shows are in some ways problematic. Not everybody likes both of them or likes any of them. But we finally have a superhero show with a female lead. I mean, since Linda Carter, right? Is that the last time we had a...
Well, it depends on what you rate Agent Carter as.
Right, and I love Agent Carter. I find that show amazing, but she's not a superhero. She's no more a superhero than Phil Coulson is.
Well, no, but
it's definitely a comic book. Sorry, something I dropped.
Well, okay, we can... So I'm going to get all academic geeky and point to Pete Coogan's book, Superheroes, The Origins of a Genre, to explain why Buffy's not a superhero. But that's...
Buffy's a superhero.
Okay, all right, so hold on for a minute. Just, I want to note that this is a really fuzzy question and kind of irrelevant. It's a great bar question. We could fight over it for an hour. But I do know that in the episode, Tabula Rasa, when she has amnesia, and she says, and I quote, "I think I'm kind of a superhero." So I get that. I do. But that's not the kind of part I'm talking about. The fact that you ask the average person on the street to name a female superhero, they're not going to think of Buffy, right?
They're also not going to think of Jessica Jones.
Well, but but she's a superhero.
Is she? She wouldn't say so.
That's irrelevant to the point. Well, I'm not trying to make this a fight over whether or not a character is a superhero or not. I was just trying to say that I think that we've made that this year has seen some great female superheroic protagonists headlining their own shows. And I think that's wonderful. And I think it's about time, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of them. I think it's an important year for female superheroes. That was it.
Hear, hear.
I know there was a big thing made out of, obviously, Wonder Woman appearing in the next Superman-Batman thing, which is really cool. And I think the idea that the Wonder Woman movie, when it comes out, is going to have possibly some period stuff from World War One in it, yeah, is interesting as well. Makes it definitely so. Yeah, I can see that. I think next year should be hopefully continue that trend. I myself, I really like Supergirl for the first two episodes, and then I got fed up with it. That was it. I kind of missed it, and I thought, oh well, that was it, and I just couldn't always go back. Jessica Jones, same thing. Two episodes in, meh. Luke Cage, yay, Luke Cage. Okay, that was it. So. Yeah, I don't know. They just don't hold my interest. I don't know what it is, but that doesn't work for me.
I watched the first two episodes of Jessica Jones, and then like the next, a couple of days later, I binge watched the other 11.
I found Jessica Jones to be a fantastic series.
Yeah, I love Jessica Jones.
I liked it a lot. I mean, it made some changes. Those of you that have watched the show, the beginning of the show, we had a lot of this kind of Raymond Chandler kind of private dick voiceover going on. And I like that kind of noirish, but it disappeared about halfway through the show and they never looked back. I honestly felt, because it's so much a show about rape, it's very much the overriding kind of theme of the show. I almost felt like I wasn't sure I was the audience, which was actually kind of cool to feel that way, because every superhero show is basically written for me, and I thought it was good to see that the shows are being written for a broader audience. I mean, all of my smart women friends all love that show, and I thought that was, and they're all voting for how Kilgrave is the Purple Man is like the best Marvel villain ever, best comic book villain ever, and I find that very interesting, and I think it's very encouraging and exciting. Supergirl, I watched the first couple, and then like eight, I kind of been drifting in and out. Like if I can remember, I watch it. But I'm gonna have to watch them all. I'm gonna have to go back and watch them all. But I'm glad to see that it's in there. And I noted that its cast is sort of overwhelmingly female. Like she's got the mother and the aunt and the sister, and the villains are female, and like it's very much a kind of all female ensemble. And I found that an interesting design choice for the show, and I hope that they keep it up.
Yeah, and it also hasn't gone down the... I mean, on that, Cat Grant is obviously in charge of a media company rather than a fashion company, which they could have done. And they could have gone like the whole kind of Catwoman bad guy in the Halle Berry movie, where it's we're all female villains, so we must like fashion and cool things like that. It's pretty cool.
I mean, in the Halle Berry Catwoman movie, the villainous plot is evil makeup.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, even the original Helen Slater Supergirl film is a bit that way inclined as well. But
And I didn't like Cat Grant in the Supergirl series at all until recently. We got an episode where they humanized her, and she had a little bit of conversation where she became less of a cookie cutter kind of cliche. And so I think if we give that show a little bit of time, I think it might find some actual depth.
Okay, I just talking to Supergirl, I have one question that I haven't managed to find the answer for about the first episode of Supergirl. Okay.
Yeah.
The plot of it, when they show Kal-El tearing the front off the rocket where it's to rescue Supergirl, yeah?
Yeah.
Did he not notice the giant space prison next to the rocket that was shown about 45 minutes later on in the episode?
Did the space prison crash?
I swear the space prison is literally sitting next to the pod. It I could be wrong, but I swear it is.
I don't know. I'll have to look. I'll have to check that. I don't know. I have no answer for that, Abe.
Even if the space prison is there, since there are Kryptonians in the space prison who are adults with military training, my assumption is that by the time Superman got there, discovered that his cousin was in a wrecked pod, that she was freaking out, that she had not yet broken herself out, the evil Kryptonians had taken over the space prison, figured out that they were on another planet, grabbed everyone they wanted, and buggered off.
Yeah, if we're going to go for a no prize, I think Owen's answer is as good as any. You know,
Except, yeah, that's fair enough. I just thought it was odd. Cal mentioned there may be 50 or 60 space villains running around. So look out for that. It was there at the time, parked nearby. I thought, but nobody's...
Well, the funny thing is,
someone, right? Because the humans know that it's happening, and Supergirl doesn't. So
yes, that is true, yes.
Superman may well have gone to the government and said, by the way, here's a significant problem you should be aware of.
But I'm not going to help you do anything about it.
Given who it is, the attitude of everyone we have seen in that human organization, he may have said, and I'll help you catch them. And they went, no, that's fine. Thanks, Will.
sure.
You have to assume that considering how long ago this capsule landed, he's already dealt with several of these people. I mean, let's give some intelligence towards him. But the fact is, the focus of the show is on Supergirl, and as such, they need to focus on what she's doing about this thing. So if they go on and on about what he's been doing in backstory, it would be like reading Prince Caspian.
Yeah, of course. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, just like same reason why every time we run a role-playing game and somebody says, I call the city guard, and you have to tell them, well, the city guard's not showing up because that's your job.
Right? You say the series is about Supergirl, which technically speaking it is, but if you I won't say who's shown up and who's going to be in it. Now, we have had certain reveals of characters showing up. Now, do you think that takes away the focus of being the Supergirl show, or do you think that adds to the idea of just like bombarding it with extra cast members seems to stray away from it being a Supergirl show?
Well, the same argument can be had about, you know, all these backup characters in Arrow or The Flash.
Which is exactly why I don't like The Flash. Flash never really had the backup. He doesn't need a group of scientists going, okay, Flash, this is where the bad guy is. It's over there. He doesn't need it. He never really had it.
I have to disagree with you. Yeah. In our modern era, with the technology we have, a support team is the best thing for a hero to have.
Flash did have backup. It was called the Justice League. And he did something with them every single month. The fact of the matter is that when you're trying to launch what is going to be a new hero universe, you have to ask the question, is this guy capable of doing absolutely everything by himself? And if so, what threat possibly makes him interesting? And if not, who's he going to go to for help? And I think The Flash is a perfectly reasonable answer to it. I mean, any new medium is essentially an Elseworlds. Right? This is not an effort to say, this is a show that is exactly like Flash the comic, and if we do anything different, we've gotten it wrong. This is to say, hey, what's the core of this? The core of this is a guy who runs really, really fast, who the city kind of loves, and who's a little goofy sometimes, and who has these villains who may or may not be particularly focused, right? Grodd is not a uplifted animal in the comic, but that's a perfectly reasonable origin for him, and they've even gotten him to Gorilla City now. So I am perfectly happy to cut some leeway on details as long as the heart of what makes the character interesting remains in place, and the show is well written, and I think The Flash does both of those in spades.
Speaking of supernatural beasts, don't you guys have a Kickstarter right now?
We do have a Kickstarter
right now. Let's talk about that. It's that time of the podcast.
So we currently have the Superpowered Bestiary. It's on Kickstarter. We've already met our goal, so you'll get your stuff. It's mostly written even, so there's no risk of 3 years from now us saying, hey, we've got Chapter 5 done. What we're doing right now is stretch goals. And honestly, Jacob is almost keeping up with the stretch goals as we hit them, right? So there's not a huge lead time on this. But we couldn't do this without the extra income to pay for Jacob's time. And we have to do two forms of layout, etc. But this is an opportunity. Mutant Semester Runs is a great system. I love it to death. But you have to write up everything. Right, if you want your street level hero to have to face three Rottweilers to get into the warehouse, you got to know what the stats for a Rottweiler are. If you want your version of Fing Fang Foom to take on your Nordic gods in New York City, you need a version of Fing Fang Foom. So a bestiary that just has a ton of stuff in it, which sort of has its origins in fantasy series, but let's face it, in comics you've got vampires and dragons, and trolls, and Asgardian gods, and zombies, and animals, and weird creatures from other planets all show up pretty regularly. So this is an opportunity to have all of that written up. They're good write-ups. They're at a wide range of PLs, so you can find something you need. The hope is to get everything. It's extensively illustrated now, but the hope is to get everything illustrated. And it's all written and illustrated by the same guy, Jacob Blackman, who I'm going to let talk here in a second. So unlike some bestiaries where you're like, well, this says that this thing has one head and this illustration has two, you know that what you see is what the guy that was writing up the stats intended.
Because it's the same guy.
Yes, it's the same guy.
Indeed.
Jacob, talk a little about your project.
No, I've always felt that comics and monsters have gone hand in hand. If you look at the old Marvel comics where they just had one monster comic after another coming out, it was inevitable that monsters and superheroes would meet, and they have on many times. I mean, you had Dracula going up against the X-Men, and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm trying to get to the superpowered bestiary out there so that your campaigns can have this plethora of opponents who aren't always supervillains, because, you know, sometimes they can be aliens from space having big squiggly boogly powers and tentacles and psionics, or they can be strange creatures who are fairies from beyond the veil, called forth by a evil fairy queen. And, you know, and then
where is this veil exactly you keep referring to?
The beyond the veil, that's a term my people tend to use for like the fairy veil or penetrating what lies between this world and the next.
So it's not a suburb of Tulsa. Just checking. Sorry.
The fairy veil comes up in Lord Dunsany's wonderful fantasy novel, King Valfland's Daughter, and that's its source from the early 1900s.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
Sorry, I blame the cold medicine. Sorry, guys. That was just me trying to be funny. Yes, I'm familiar with the phrase. I've read Keats. Please continue. I'm sorry.
And there are plenty of heroes that make use of either monstrous powers or animal powers, because you know you've got Werewolf by Night, who is a classic monster, the werewolf, trying to be a hero. You've got Blade, the vampire, trying to be a hero, depending on which incarnation of the comic you read, and more the classic as opposed to the modern day, where he's just a guy hunting vampires. And then, you've got Darkchild from Image Comics, who has the ability to turn into monsters.
Yeah, you have Frankencastle, who's a flesh golem.
Exactly. We do, yes.
They don't all have to be good ideas.
So yeah, we want to have this source book covering lots of different creatures from all different sources, so that you can have all these options for your campaign. And Mutants and Masterminds is by far my favorite superhero RPG, and so I thought this was the best platform to present it.
Excellent. And you guys are doing really well on Kickstarter. And if someone wants to find that on Kickstarter, I guess they can just go to Kickstarter.com and search for Superpowered Bestiary, and yep, you're going to be the first one that pops up.
Or you can search for me, Owen Stevens. I'm running it under my own Kickstarter. And, we already have a stretch goal. We've got Steve Kenson, who created M&M, doing our foreword. We've got new creatures and new art. We've got other stuff that we're going to announce as stretch goals, assuming we hit them. One of my favorite runs of comics ever was when a bunch of Marvel stuff, but especially New Mutants, spent a fair amount of time in Asgard.
Yes, that was a great series of stories.
And since they were in Asgard, you were regularly running into trolls and giants and different kinds of giants, for that matter, and witches and valkyries and a bunch of fantasy-themed things. And I tried to run that in a superhero setting at one point, and I realized that for any encounter that I wanted, I had to write up everything, because it just, I could not repurpose the Giggler as a villain for this setup, so I had to do everything from scratch, and it made it a huge slog to prepare any of those games. So this is a case where it's one of my favorite runs of comics, thematically at least, that I wanted to recreate, and it was just too much work. Because the very advantage that Mutants and Masterminds has, that you can break down everything into, hey, what does it actually do, means that almost nothing is pre-done for you. And there's tons of people, us included, that give you a lot of kind of traditional heroes and villains, but not a lot of people saying, hey, let's say that you've got a forgotten prehistoric land in the center of the Earth, and when your daring adventurers accidentally wreck a mole machine there, they end up being attacked by a T-Rex. Here are some stats for a T-Rex.
So how big is this book going to be if we're going to print it out? How many pages are we talking about?
Currently more than 300 pages, over 180 separate write-ups. We're adding things as we go with stretch goals, so right now, I'd say 95% of them have illustrations. We're hoping to hit 100% before we're done with this. And as people keep pledging stuff, we'll keep expanding it. And then we're going to have just a few villains as well that sort of tie into the use of some of the things in the book.
Cool. Look forward to seeing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I noticed during this podcast that I had a new pledge level. Let's see, $5. Someone on this podcast pledged during the podcast.
That was me.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
So we appreciate your support.
Thank you very much.
That's the BAM podcast bump.
There you go.
You got at least $5 for coming on and,
We got at least $5. As an hourly rate, that's terrible, but thematically.
Well, that's, yeah, fair enough. So, all right, well, hey, I have to pick up my dog from the groomers, because, that's a thing you do as a responsible dog owner.
As one does.
So, let's wrap things up. Anyone else have anything they want to say before we call quits?
Yeah, real quickly. We need to recognize that our man Aid Smith has his first entry in Rogues Gallery up for sale this week. So go to the Green Ronin online store and buy his Rogues Gallery because it's freaking awesome.
Okay. What's the name of the villain?
Aid. It's the Elzaya. Yeah. Elzaya, Empress of the Microverse. I'm sorry, it's very late here. The Improverse. She's from the Microverse. Yes, she's very cool.
Okay, is this on RPG Now or is this on Green Ronin at this point?
It's on Green Ronin at the moment. It should be on RPG Now. Hopefully in the next couple of days, I believe.
Okay, yeah, so GreenRonin.com. And if you go to Green Ronin's RPG Now page, they have a link you can click from Rogues Gallery where you'll find that. So cool. Hey, you know, I should probably also mention on this podcast, I just released a couple of things for Icons. And let's just talk about our new adventure, Eaters of Steel, was just released for Icons yesterday for $1.50, and it'll be coming out for Savage Worlds and Supers in a couple of days. So
it is important to note that this does not feature a snack cake comic.
It doesn't. Well, it's funded by Patreon, and one of my stretch goals on Patreon is snack cake comics, because I love them, but they're not cheap. Mm. So, and, you know, people like adventures, but, you know, so far I've got 20 backers giving $100 per adventure, and that pays for a couple pieces of art and the layout. But hey, go to Patreon, find Fanny Goat Games, support our adventures, and maybe eventually we can get Jacob to draw some snack cake comics for us in there.
I think those are brilliant, by the way. Those are just my favorite marketing throwback ever.
Oh, they're mine too. I'm having. In fact, I think Aid's working on one right now. For we're coming out with a new
Yeah, I'll sketch out this afternoon.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Oh, we're coming out with a new villain book. Hopefully, the next couple of weeks, and Aid's doing the snack cake comic for that right now.
Which villain is in the snack cake comic?
Aid, have you decided?
I believe it's going to be the Living Repository, unless I'm mistaken. That's the plan at the moment, anyway.
Okay. Sort of Brainiac guy. Nice. We did a Mutants, we did a Miscreants, Malefactors, and Megalomaniacs Volume 1 last year, and this is Volume 2 of that same line. Excellent. So, and I had a moment of clarity and decided not to do a Christmas villain pack that was going to feature the Dreidel of Doom and Tannenbaum and Mistletoe. It was sitting there on my hard drive. I had it written. And I had to have that moment. I was like, this isn't funny enough to release. It's also where people release joke RPGs, and they're really only funny for like, that's kind of amusing. And they still release them, and it's, you know, kind of anticlimactic. And this one, I was like, this just, it didn't quite make the cut. I mean,
embarrassing a few months later.
It'd be embarrassing a few months. I just like the phrase Dreidel of Doom. And, that's not enough to base a whole PDF on, unfortunately. So, in a better world, it would be.
But not for lack of trying.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, everybody, thanks for coming out. I appreciate you guys joining our roundtable for this evening.
Thanks for having us.
And to all of our dedicated and patient listeners, we appreciate you indulging us, and we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.